very good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to yet another episode of Life Lessons right here on your number one talk radio station. Now, you know, this is the show where we bring you insightful conversation that we can learn from and also be inspired. Now, tonight we are joined by Sean Node. He is the founder of Marshall Rangers. A very good afternoon to you, Sean. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
A very good afternoon to you all, and it's always a pleasure.
Sean, I want us to get right into the nitty-gritties of who exactly Sean is. First of all, I want to find out, who is Sean? Where did he actually grow up, and how was your growing up like?
Yeah, I was born in Windhoek way back in 1974.
Yeah.
And I basically lived in Windhoek until I was selected to sing in the Drakensberg Boys Choir in South Africa, Natal. And then I went basically and represented for about 2.5 years our country in one of the best choirs in the world. And in the meantime, my parents moved to South Africa. So I was still young. I had to go and live with them for a while. And then when I was old enough to make my own decisions, I left home and I came back to my true home, which is Namibia. And I've been here ever since.
So you were born in Namibia?
Yes, I'm a born Windhoeker.
Oh, interesting. I was born in Windhoek, by the way.
Oh, awesome.
Okay, cool. Interesting. So how was school like for you? Were you...
I was the rebel. I was the naughty one.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
No, I was Dennis the Menace. I was always in the principal's office, always in trouble for something, you know. So, yeah, no, I wasn't the sweet little innocent.
Yeah.
I was naughty, but naughty in a nice way, but people didn't understand me, which is the reason why I ended up leaving school. I did a bit of college and a bit of studying, but at the end of the day, I wasn't very academic.
I hear you. So where did the love of emergency come from, and you also being a marshal? Just give us a background of that.
Well, basically, my whole life I was inspired by people like the Lone Ranger and Chips, the two cops on motorcycles, and firemen. And, you know, so I had this great passion from young for emergency things, police services, law enforcement, blue lights and red lights, just do it for me, and sirens, of course, you know. So it came from a very, very young age. But as I said, I was a bit of a rebel. I ended up in wrong crowds. I ended up going into the music industry in a very big way, rock and roll. Had a very big rock band in the 90s here in Namibia.
Yeah.
And it was all rock and roll until 97. After winning big awards and whatever, I decided to change my life and start serving people and serving my country. So in 1997, I made a decision to give up the music industry and the entertainment and all this industry and then go into law enforcement and emergency services to help officials. And that's where the big passion came from, and I just started making friends with people in the emergency field. When I used to see an accident or something, I used to help them on the scenes. And basically, it was just a passion of serving, you know, helping, making yourself available. You see an officer standing at an accident scene, you know, help him, give him a helping hand. And it just progressed. I was cleaning up accident scenes, sweeping streets, picking up debris of accidents, helping the paramedics. And I just got such a passion on the ground as a volunteer assistant. And then the idea was, let's register our own unit.
I see. Okay. And that was round about how many years ago before you actually registered your unit?
Well, in 2014, the Namibian Marshall Rangers became an official unit. And we started off with a few members. And what we used to do is we used to help the police. We used to help with emergency services. And then in 2019, we registered as an official emergency rescue service. And I got my first ambulance.
I see. How many did you start off when you started off?
one ambulance, and only a few months later it got sideswiped by a person in an intersection, partly my fault, partly their fault, and then I had to go to South Africa, purchase another ambulance, and in the end I was sitting with about five ambulances serving the communities with, and then of course COVID happened, and it was hectic because I was running around with my ambulances helping people with free oxygen. I invested a lot of money into going to people's houses and giving them free oxygen.
The passion for serving has always been with you. Probably, I'm thinking, even when you were a child, or when exactly did it start?
Well, it started at a young age. It started as a child, as I said, to serve people, to be there for people. And, I studied what I could. I watched a lot of movies to learn a lot. I watched a lot of documentaries. I did some studying, and I just wanted to get involved with everything. And I was helping fire departments, fighting fires. And at the end of the day, I just got involved in so many different areas of the emergency services.
That's quite interesting, hey. Now, what do you say to, while we're still just at the very early beginning of our conversation, what do you say to those who still have the same, who have the same passion as you, see themselves in emergency services, and perhaps they feel like their dream is far-fetched because they just don't seem to be making it, especially within the course that they want to take? What do you say to those young ones, or maybe even adults?
Well, I say encourage your children and teach them well, teach them right, teach them how to care for each other. And what happens is this brings out a passion to want to become part of a nation and contribute to the safety and the security of this country. And if you have a heart to help people, especially injured people, sick people and that, get into the medical field from young. Mm-hmm. I made the mistake that the moment I started wanting to do paperwork, I was already in my 30s. Mm-hmm. You see?
Yeah.
And this is a problem. You need to do it at a young age. If you're 18 years old, 19, 20, and you want to, you love paramedics or you love the medical field, best you start young. Go and do your BLS, your basic life support. Once you've got that, then progress to ILS. Once you've got that, if you can, go all the way to ALS, because the more knowledge you have, the more skills you have. And also, you know, the fulfillment in it and the higher qualifications you are having, that way you can actually get a good income too and do something which you love doing. I always tell people, do what you love doing and invest in it. And if your passion is to help people and help injured people and that, go into it. If your passion is to keep law and order, go into it. And we should encourage our children. And if your child wants to be a fireman, don't stop them.
Yeah.
Buy them little fire trucks. Buy them little things that will get them in that direction. There's nothing better than a focused child, because a focused child becomes a focused adult.
That is so true. Now, speaking right at that, I think sometimes as parents, really, we see the child has a talent in...
Some things kind of have to be together, right? Imagine, pop, but no flakes. Never. Or a goal without a celebration. And friends, but no Tassenberg.
Now that's just not right. Tassenberg. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Sometimes as parents, really, we see the child has a talent and we don't really go out our way to encourage them. I mean, for instance, here in Windhoek, we have the City of Windhoek Fire Brigade, and they're also open to actually taking in some children, whether it's pre-grades or kindergarten or, you know, it doesn't matter actually what age. So speak to us again, or speak to the parents again, on emphasizing the importance of really stirring up our children in that direction and actually just doing more to make sure that we show them that we're actually supporting them in the goals that they are trying to achieve.
I would encourage, and we used to do this with my ambulances and crews. We used to go to schools, kindergartens. We used to do demonstrations. We used to do simulations. And that way you see what sparks up a child at young. Does it appeal to them? Does it scare them? Does it? And if they at a young age can see, this is what makes my eyes glow and it makes me feel all good, then encourage it. Take them to the fire department. Let them meet the firemen. Let them see what a fire truck looks like. You know, I think the police and emergency services should interact. And I know many of them do it, especially the city of Windhoek is good of it,
yeah,
where they interact with the children. They have open days. They have, and this way, if you see that your child has the passion, you know already where to encourage it. And you know where to invest. And that way you're going to encourage your child to go in a direction. And if that's what your child wants, support it.
Mm-hmm.
We as parents are there to guide, lead, and we're here to support. So if our child says our child doesn't want to be a doctor just because uncle and aunt and everybody else was a doctor, no, they want to be a police officer or a fireman, encourage it. Don't go against it. Don't tell me because your uncle was a doctor, you have to be a doctor, or your dad was a doctor. Some will not be able to handle it. We've had medics that went and did their BLS, and the first accident scene where there was either a fatality or lots of blood, they pass out or they get sick.
Yeah.
So there they found out that they aren't actually made for this. Every single human being is designed for a purpose. And for a duty. And we, your biggest goal in life is to find out who you are, what appeals to you. And if you can encourage children to find their own individuality and design it and build it and focus on it, they will only get better, because a master is somebody who continuously makes mistakes.
You're right. And you know what? I want to say that you embody this passion so well. I feel like you
I love it.
Yes,
it's my life.
Do.
I breathe it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I mean, I observe. I've seen you really do, and I've worked with you. You know, I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
But yeah, the way you really carry out your work is, and even the way you give yourself out there, I mean, you give your last to just ensure that you care for the people and ensure that the people are well taken care of. I appreciate that. And you know, people actually notice that. And so I concur with you to say that, you know, I think when a person is really passionate about something and they pursue that particular thing, when it aligns now with their purpose, that's what they are called out to do. I think they do excellent and they do really good. Maybe then we will have less people going to work being grumpy, don't you think?
Well, if you're doing what you enjoy doing, and not just, a lot of people also join the emergency services in it for a job, or the police force as a job. And that's where sadly you will find officers that some become corrupt. Some become, some don't even do their duties because they joined it for the job, for the salary, but they didn't join it for what they love doing. I love doing what I'm doing. I regret not doing all my certificates and becoming an advanced life support, because I really want to save somebody's life. And even if I've got the knowledge, I'm not allowed to do it because I don't have the certificates, you see?
I hear you.
And that makes me frustrated, is having all the knowledge of being on the ground for so many years, helping people, doing successful resuscitations, all those things, but not having an advanced life support certificate frustrates me. And I started at a older age doing my paperwork, and now I'm sitting at 51 years old, and it's pointless for me to go to try and do university or something to become get my degrees. I hear you.
But you know what? I want to believe that maybe you didn't start off late. Maybe you felt like you were late, but maybe you needed the experience and you needed to be an adult also just to start off at that time. Because look at the way you serve now. You know, I think experience and knowledge really plays and maturity plays a huge part in it.
That's exactly right, and that's where volunteer work is important. Even if you're not qualified, even if you're not certified, go volunteer at the fire department. Go and volunteer in community projects. Go and volunteer in anything that is helpful to the community, because that way you get practical experience. What is to my advantage is I might not have those certificates, but I have years and years of on-the-ground experience. And when an incident happens, knowledge is powerful, but knowing what to do is even more powerful. We have a lot of qualified medics out there, but when it comes to an accident scene under a traumatic situation, they lose control despite having the theory.
Exactly.
So practical is very, very, very important. And I have the practical because I've always been willing to take action. To instead of running away from a storm, I run into the storm.
Yeah.
You get two kinds of people in this world. They either cows or bulls or buffalo. A cow will stand in the field, and if a storm comes, the cow will run away from the storm.
Mm.
But you get a buffalo, and when the storm comes, the buffalo runs into the storm and charges it. Because when you run away from something, it will follow you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And it once it hits you, it's going to hit you hard, and you'll be stuck in it because you're running with it. But if you go and face your problems and everything in life directly and the challenges, you run through the storm, eventually you will get past the storm because it's headed in the opposite direction. And you come out on the other side and you're much stronger than everybody else.
Mm. You speak about community work. Do you think perhaps, if a lot of people were engaged in community work, because I mean, sometimes it is when you serve others that you begin to see and appreciate also the little that you have. Because I, you know, there's something that I always like to say, wherever you are, whether you lack this and that, you always better off than somebody else, you know? So do you think perhaps serving, into community work sometimes can help reduce a lot of mental issues? Maybe they will help us go back to gratitude. Maybe they will also help us, you know, to just focus on other people and less more on our problems and the issues that we're going through. What's your take on that?
Unless you've carried a bucket of water to provide water for your home, you will never understand the value of water. And this is the thing. If we do not appreciate the community and what a value we can bring to bringing a community together and working together, we need to understand one thing. Whether the earth is round, flat, square, doesn't matter. We are all in this together. We are all part of this together. And the biggest attack and the biggest weapon of any enemy is to divide us. And if we do not stand together as a community and work together, that makes our community weak.
Yeah.
Because a chain is only as strong as its weakest link.
That's true.
So if you have a good, strong chain and you have people doing their part, but you do not do your part as a community member, keeping the streets clean, abiding by the laws, you become a weak link. And that weak link causes the whole chain, the whole system to fall apart. And that's the same with community affairs. If we as a community, I must give lots of honor to the people here in the informal settlements.
Mm-hmm.
I drive through DRC and all of that. The community work together, and I promise you, we can win an award for the cleanest informal settlements in the world.
Mm, look at that, you know. But you speak about the cleanest community in the world. I don't know. It draws me to Namibia as a whole, you know, Sean. I think
what a country.
Yeah. Thank you.
What a country. I love
you.
My country. I dare anybody to challenge me of being more of a patriot of Namibia than me.
You know what? I think, my goodness. I wouldn't want to. I'm glad I was born Namibian. You understand? I'm glad I was born in this country. You know,
the land of milk and honey.
The land of the brave. Yeah.
Yes. You know what? We only have to be brave because everybody else is trying to take it away from us.
Yeah.
And therefore, we must not be wavered.
Mm-hmm.
Like the movie I acted in with the founding president, it was called Where Others Wavered.
Yeah.
And we must, we in Namibia must not waver. We must stand. This is a land where we do not survive, we live. And we thrive.
Yeah.
And this is because we are friendly, we help, people cannot believe. Namibia is like a totally different, it can almost be separated from the rest of Africa.
Yes,
where that's different.
Yes, because we are so kind, so peaceful. You know what? I was actually speaking to some people today and some ladies, and they were like, you know what? We are not xenophobic. And that's so true, you know? I don't think we go around saying, no, this one took my job and this type of stuff.
You know what? I work in the emergency services, and somebody from Zambia's truck breaks next to the road, no?
Yeah.
And I put on our Namstrong platforms, guys, we've got a trucker standing next to the road. They will stop and give him water.
Exactly.
They will help him.
Yes.
They will stop and get, this doesn't happen anywhere else. This doesn't happen. We do have a few incidences and a few people trying to dirty the waters here. But in general, the Namibian people stand together when it matters. And I've seen it. And there's no, oh, you're from Botswana, you're from there. No,
no,
it's not. We're a people.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this for everybody out there, for a man that was born in the apartheid era against his own will, okay, who never had a problem with color, because I don't judge people by color. I judge them by character.
No, you don't.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, if you look at it, even here, we have a few people who are still a bit racist, but that's from both sides. People think that racists are only white people.
That's
no,
true.
If you are a person who has a problem with another race, you are a racist.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're white, black, pink, purple, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So we mustn't always take it to generalization, but at the end of the day, we in Namibia, we're a poikikos.
We are.
We're a mixed grill,
yeah,
and we just taste good.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about tourism for a second. Do you probably think that because of our uniqueness and the way we are so welcoming to tourists? I mean, you can go to town literally, or a tourist. Let me rephrase that. A tourist can go to town literally and ask for directions and say, "Where is this?" And they will get the help that they need. It's very rare that, of course, maybe they'll get conned into whatnot, but then they'll get the genuine help that they need. Something that in other countries you'd be cautioned to say, you don't ask for strangers for help. So let's talk about our tourist industry. Just where do you think we will be 3-5 years from now in terms of tourism? Do you think we'll be boosting more tourists to come to Namibia because of how we are, the friendliness and all that kind of stuff? Or just exactly where do you think we'll be? And also, while you are at that, what are those particular pointers that you think we should focus on to help really attract tourists to our country?
Well, the thing is, you know, despite the occasional incident where tourists get robbed or stuff like that, that happens anywhere in the world. But I can tell you what, as part of our services as Marshall Rangers, we are a tourist protection unit. And if you look at the amount of incidents to the amount of tourists in this country, we have very low statistics on crimes against tourists. Okay, and that is because Namibians, when they see trouble, they report it. They go and warn people. They say, don't do this, don't go there. They actually, when somebody looks lost, they go, hi, sir, can I help you? Where would you like to go? And even though the tourists are shocked in the beginning, they warm up to the fact that Namibians actually can be friendly and helpful, and that they are willing to help. And that's why I said we must not generalize because of a few isolated incidences. I must say one thing, tourists can walk around here and enjoy their holiday on any given day.
Yeah.
It is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here at Swakopmund right now, and I'm busy sitting here by the beach having this interview with you. And I'm looking at the tourists.
Care that helps you care for others. That's the Basic Mental Health First Aid course, free for NHP members. You learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
If you've reached that stage in life where you are tired of everything, where each day is just routine. Dah, yammer me oh. No, seriously, I am genuinely sorry for you. Cause you clearly haven't been polanified. Like, boring day at the spun. Polanify your lunch hour with a delicious Polana curry. Chewing through yet another stale sandwich. Polanify your burger with a little mac and cheese. Tired of chewing the same shandy? Polanify your munchies with air-fried Polana pasta chips. Come on, life's too short for boring. Polanify every moment with Pasta Polana, a proud product of Namib Mills.
Get ready to embrace a world of possibilities at the University of Namibia with a community of ambitious students, researchers and innovators. Shape your future with a wide range of programs in agriculture, engineering, natural sciences, commerce and management, law, education, human sciences, health sciences or veterinary medicine. Apply online at unam.edu.na. UNAM, open your mind.
With you, and I'm looking at the tourists. I'm looking at them. They are enjoying their time here and not looking worried or concerned.
Yeah.
And they're actually smiling because people are smiling at them. You know,
yes.
People are not like they don't have to feel like they have to threaten and lock up and stuff like that. There is an atmosphere in our country of welcome to Namibia.
And it should be like that everywhere. I mean, imagine coming from a country such as our own, knowing all the love that happens here, and then suddenly going into this country where you are treated based on your color or based on your accent and, you know, stuff like that. So really, I applaud actually our country. But
My dear, I went to Germany. Sorry, let me quickly.
Yeah.
So I went to Germany. They don't greet you.
Oh,
they don't nothing because they're too scared or they're worried or whatever. And it was weird for me because I was then a tourist in their country. But it was so stiff and so people were like keeping to themselves and it was scary. You know, when you greet somebody, it looked like they were like, what do you want from me?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we in Namibia don't have that, and that's why when they come here, sometimes the tourists act like they are scared because they used to the only person who will approach them is a thug or a thief.
Yeah, I hear you, man. But nonetheless, let's get back to emergencies. Your passion,
yes,
your love. You know, Sean. The love of emergency and obviously being, having your ambulance to take care of people and also serving in the maritime, right?
Yes, I'm now going for the fourth year as the official sea rescue at the West Coast.
Ah, man. That's interesting.
Yeah, so I came to the coast to launch ambulance services here to help the community. And I saw there was no official sea rescue, so I invested and I bought boats and I did my training.
Yeah.
I went and got my lifeguard certificate, I got my diving certificate, and it all came from one guy who jumped off the jetty and I went and I recovered his body at the bottom of the ocean. And I decided we need sea rescue here, and I told one of my ambulances and I invested, and today I'm running. You can basically say that I am the coast guard of the West Coast between Walvis Bay and Henties Bay.
I see. And when people come to the coast, especially this festive season, and come up to you, what do those moments make you feel like, especially when it's children? You know, children are so genuine and they come up to you and really appreciate the work that you do, and you'll be surprised that, hey, come on, you know me, and stuff like
okay.
that. How does that make you feel?
Look, let me put it to you this way now. I'm not a perfect role model. I'm definitely not, okay? There's things I did in my life that I would never want to have anybody. I'll tell you something now, and I know it's a big fashion thing, but I have tattoos on my body. Do you know how I regret them? Because, you know, when I see a child come up to me, I don't want a child to look at me and go, ooh, I want a tattoo. I want a child to go, man, I want to be just like him. I want to save lives just like him. I want to jump into the ocean when somebody's drowning, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to be that kind of example to them. I want people to know me for me, mm-hmm. for the real me, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when a person comes up to me and just says, thank you for what you're doing for this country. You know what? There's no ego involved. It's just a genuine, I shed a little tear knowing that somebody actually appreciates what I'm doing, because I've paid a high price to be me,
mm-hmm.
especially in a country where we're quick to point fingers, we're quick to hold things against people, and we're quick to spread rumors and gossip, because
yeah.
one of the problems with Namibia is, due to a small population, a lot of people are in each other's business. And they criticize and judge. And this is one of the things that is destroying our country, is the division amongst each other. We're so busy finding fault in each other that we are not looking at how we can work together. And me and the emergency services, I feel so good when a child says, oh, I want to be like that.
Yeah.
I also want to be a lifesaver.
Yeah.
I also want to, and that's why I have the whole sheriff marshal image. Is so that I want to be a image that the children say, you know what? I want to be like him. I want to be a Marshall Ranger.
That's interesting. And then, Sean, should you be given the opportunity to talk to the young people, those young ones that, you know, look up to you and wanting to, and needing to instill in them some certain moral characters, perhaps also to tell them to listen to your parents, make sure that you read your books. What are some of those, advice that you would give to them? You know, you can also look back, to when you were young and maybe say, I wouldn't want you to do this.
Look, I would say to you that children in general always, they will always go against, like if you say don't touch that, they'll touch it.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, the only thing I can say to children is we are not alone. We must be considerate. If anything, we must be compassionate towards each other. We need to be understanding. Once you get a thing called respect, something we lack in this day. We have children speaking to their parents like worse than they would talk to a dog that attacks them.
Yeah.
We have lost that respect. We have lost that children have become demanding instead of grateful. Yeah? We need children that are going to respect the role of an adult. And if you can't respect an adult, how are you going to respect a law enforcement officer? Or how are you going to respect an emergency service worker? So I would encourage children to learn to consider other people, to serve other people, to help. Did you know that by helping other people, you're helping yourself even more? And you're building a strong character. And you're investing in a beautiful future. So we have sadly become a world and a generation of self-centered, selfish people. Me, 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 me. It's all about what I want.
Mm.
And this is very sad. We need to start teaching our children again things like morals and principles.
Mm-hmm.
We need to start teaching our children to be considerate. We need to teach them consequences. If we don't teach them consequences, they'll never know that what they are doing is wrong.
Yeah.
We got people going out partying, getting drunk because they've never been consequences. And you'll find a lot of your accidents over the festive season and that are by drunk youths. Drunk youths behind the wheel because they don't understand consequences until they get a 15 to 20 year sentence for somebody who died in an accident caused by their recklessness.
Yeah. And honestly, I hear you. Honestly, maybe we can't emphasize enough on that scripture that says, you know, children must obey their parents, you know. And it's the fourth commandment that they may live a long life. In other words, you invest in your future and not just in your future, in a good future. I think the reason why we have a lot of people really struggling sometimes is because of that lack of respect that you speak about. And sometimes parents are really trying to instill that into the children, but they're just not listening, you know. And then you get all these other things that are happening, but that's really not appropriate. But yeah, I appreciate that, Sean.
Yes, at the end of the day, parents are there to teach and guide. And I'll be honest, the sad thing is we have a lot of parents out there that are not taking the responsibility of exactly. being the example.
Mm.
And they're not doing what it takes to be the example to others so that they can encourage. When an adult throws a beer bottle out the car and there's children in the car, what example are you setting?
Mm.
If you're driving drunk and your children in the car, what they're going to grow up doing?
Exactly.
So it all actually, we talk about the children, but we are the examples. We as the adults are the mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And children look up to us. If you speak to your wife with disrespect, so will your child to his
yes.
wife one day.
Yes.
If you teach your child how to respect other people, to say thank you and to say please and stuff like that, they're going to have manners. But if you cannot do it as an adult, okay, how can you expect your children? How can you demand from your children? And what I'm going to say now is quite a harsh lesson in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
Is I started smoking cigarettes at a young age because my mother would have a cigarette in her mouth and tell me, "You will not smoke,"
mm-hmm.
and that brought out something rebellious in me and said, "Well, you're a hypocrite. I'm going to."
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we need to, as adults, we need to turn around and say, "You know what? I am the example." And what the example I set, okay, is that which we must follow our children.
Mm-hmm.
So if you teach your children that, listen, you don't throw rubbish. If you get a sweet, open the sweet, throw the paper in the dustbin. We would contribute to the littering of our country.
Exactly. I think I've never really had someone say it the way you say it, that we ought to be the example as parents. And many times we tell them, don't do this, but then children are monkey do, monkey see, monkey do,
yes.
Yeah. So it's about us really living that lifestyle, being a role model to them.
Don't tell me what to do. Show me what to do.
Thank you. You couldn't have said it better. And I think many of us are really not living that lifestyle. Of course, I know you can ask any parent and they'll be like, okay, I'm not a perfect parent. Yes, but then you have to still model that positive character. Because at the end of the day, we can talk about wanting a society that is conducive, that is accommodative to every one of us, you know, but we ourselves are not starting off as being examples to our children. So I really appreciate that part.
Good. Yes. I mean, as I said, you know, I'm at the age now where I have grandchildren.
Yeah.
You know?
Really?
And,
how many?
And yes. Sorry. I have three grandchildren,
oh.
two granddaughters and one grandson.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And six children, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I've done my part to building a nation. You know,
yeah,
and at the end of the day, I want my children not to think of me or remember me as somebody who made mistakes, but somebody who made the difference.
Mm, exactly.
You know, and yeah, that's what I don't want my children to, and this is why, I mean, I was a rebellious child. I mean, I did silly things, and at the end of the day, I don't want my children to bear the consequences that I had to and learn the lessons that I had to. So I can advise them and I can tell them, just remember, they end up how they want.
Mm-hmm.
Your children, you can be a priest in the church and your child ends up being a huge Satanist.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so you cannot hold the parents accountable always for the adult. I taught my daughter, you clean the dishes like this and you do this, and she still doesn't do it at 19 years old. So I'm just not even going to bother anymore, but I will keep doing it the right way.
Exactly.
You see?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you don't want to, you know what? I walk around and everywhere where I walk, I pick up trash. If it's in front of me, I pick it up, I look for the closest dustbin and I threw it there. I put it in the dustbin.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to clean up, I'll clean up. You don't want to keep my country clean,
mm-hmm.
I will.
Yeah.
You don't want to jump in the cold ocean, I will. You don't want to help others, I will. And we need that mentality of,
yes,
I will do what others fail to do. I'm going to even once again bring in my family again, and this is not against my family because I'm grateful and love them, but I had an alcohol problem in the family,
mm-hmm.
which brought conflict,
mm.
but I don't even drink.
Yeah.
It's because I chose not to be like that. I chose to break any heritage curses, anything that came with my past. I will not end up like that. One of my biggest fates in my life was to stand before my own dad and say, sorry, Dad, but I will never end up like you.
Oh, wow. Imagine.
Yeah, and that's a harsh move for a man to do, to stand up to his own dad and say, Dad, I will not. I refuse to be like you.
Yeah.
You know, we cannot choose our parents. But we can choose our friends, and the friends you choose make a big difference in the life you will lead.
Mm-hmm. Show me your friends and I'll show you who you are.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's why I have no friends. I only have acquaintances.
Yeah, I hear you. I think at this point, I would, before we close off on the topic of family and whatnot, I think at this point, I would want to ask you to say, talk to that one parent who has really been going out to be, to train up their child or their children, you know, in the way that really they should go by being a model to them, and they've gone, and the children have gone out on to be maybe teenagers or adult kids. But they just won't listen. And obviously, you know, you get some parents who beat themselves up and blame themselves to say, maybe it's because I didn't do this. Maybe I wasn't good enough, and blame themselves so many things. So talk to them about really just setting themselves free to say, you can only do so much. You can only take the horse to drink to the well, but you can't force it to actually take the water.
If you have done anything in your life as an example, and you have set the example through actions to your children, and they do not follow those examples, that is on them. But if you are hypocritical and tell them not to do something, but you do it yourself, then you are expecting rebellion, and you're expecting that they will probably go in the same line of field and in the same way. So it all lies on us. But if you have done everything in your power to provide for your child, to give them a good life, but they end up being some drug addict rebel that does nonsense and ends up in prison, don't blame yourself. Every human being is an individual, whether they're young or old. We all born alone and we die alone. Whether you have a parents, family, whatever, we are accountable at the end. That's why the word always says, as a child, we as parents are accountable for the children. But once they become of knowing, of age of knowing, then they are accountable for their own actions and their own decisions. And if they want to be rebellious in that, then, you know, go make your bed and sleep in it.
Exactly.
And I just want to tell you something else about that phrase that you said, if you take them to water and they don't drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is a way that you can. And this is called tough love. Okay? You got to be harsh on your children. You have to be firm. I'm not saying aggressive. I'm not saying abusive. You have to be firm. You have to lay down laws. You remember, you have regulations. That's why we have laws in our country. That's why we have traffic lights, is to regulate and have laws. And the thing is, you give them salt. If you give a horse salt, okay, it will get thirsty and it will drink the water. So therefore, you give your children, right, you give them what they need as sustenance. And if they don't, you cut them off from that sustenance, and suddenly you will get cooperation, because they are seeking something that they want that you will give them. So at the end of the day, it's in our hands to do the right thing to that our children. But once our children get to a point where they are consciously making decisions for themselves, then you are set free as an adult. They are therefore accountable for their own actions. The same thing with if we come with the ambulance to somebody's house, if that person is competent and can make a decision, even if he's bleeding profusely, okay, if he refuses to go on the ambulance, I may not load him on the ambulance.
Exactly.
I can get charged for kidnapping. So he signs a document saying, I competently say I don't want to go to the hospital. If he dies, it's on him.
Exactly. You can't force him.
And the same with children. You teach your children, you guide them to a point, and eventually when you get to a point and they don't listen and they've made their own decisions, cut them off. Don't stop loving them. Don't stop being there for them.
Mm-hmm.
Catch them when they fall.
Mm-hmm.
They'll always be our children, no matter how old.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's better to sit back and watch the show.
And give tough love.
Exactly.
Mm. You know what? Let's pause right here now and take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back shortly to continue this wonderful conversation.
Some days life feels perfect, other days it just ain't working. The good, the bad, the right, the wrong, and everything in between. Yo, it's crazy, amazing, we can turn our heart through the words we say. Mountains crumble with every syllable, broken, live or die. So speak life. Tongue gets twisted, other days my thoughts just fall apart. I do, I don't, I will, I won't. It's like I'm drowning in the deep. Well, it's crazy to imagine words from my lips as the arms of compassion. Mountains crumble with every syllable. Who can live or die? So speak life. Like fire, hope will fall like rain. When you speak life with the words you say, raise your thoughts a little higher. Use your words to inspire. Joy will fall like rain when you speak life with the things you say. Lift your head.
And we are back. Like I said, you are tuned into Life Lessons right here on your number one talk radio station. We're getting to know Sean and also understanding his love for emergency. Now, let's get right into safety tips for this festive season, Sean. I know you have been hands-on when it comes to emergency and anything that happens, regardless of whether you are in Swakopmund and an accident actually happens in Okahanja, like, for instance, what just recently happened. So talk to us about, you know, safetiness during this festive season. I think we get a little bit too excited and maybe lose focus and rather forget that it's better to arrive late than never.
All right. That is brilliant what you're saying. And preparation is 80% of any journey's success.
Yeah.
And being prepared, making sure your vehicles are in good running condition, making sure you've packed this, making sure you've ordered the medication you need, making sure these all things, preparation is very, very important. And once we do preparations and make sure our tires are right and make sure our vehicle license discs tasks are in order. This is just going to make our holidays so much smoother and easier, because at the end of the day, you have people at rushing around because they quick have to do this, quick have to do that. You know what's coming. You know what you've planned. You know you've got family outings. Don't wait the day before Christmas to go and look for candles. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't wait till the last minute before you take action. You know you're going to this December do this. You're going to go there. Make sure you get sunblock before all the sunblock is sold out, or you pay double the price because it's festive season, you know? So preparation is your most important thing that makes a journey or a holiday or a getaway so much easier and lighter. And yeah, we can't predict. You can do all the safety measures and you're on the road and something happens, or some reckless driver is rushing because he forgot candles at the shop and he causes an accident and ruins your whole holiday. You know? But the main thing here is being considerate. You need to be considerate of each other. You need to be considerate of the fact that you're not alone on the road, that you are going to be with other people, that you are going to do your part, that at the end of the day, your actions are going to be consequential to others. You're going to, if you drive reckless on the road, you're putting everybody else's life at danger, not just yours, including your passengers. So I think it's about being a mindset of the fact that you're coming to the beach and you're not on the beach alone. So don't leave your bottles and stuff on the beach. Don't make fires on the beaches and leave your hot coals on the beaches. So it boils down to, we share this world together. And at the end of the day, we need to work together to keep it clean, to keep it neat, to keep it safe.
Yeah.
If you're on the roads, you make sure that you do the right thing, that you act responsibly, that you don't take unnecessary chances. If you're at the beach, don't go and drink alcohol. Don't go swim in the ocean drunk. Don't leave children alone, unattended at water places, whether it's a swimming pool or whether in your backyard or at the Atlantic Ocean or in a river in Rundu. You know what I mean? Let's be responsible.
Now, when it comes to accident scenes or anything that really happens that requires then the next person, or it requires emergency help, I think, of course, sometimes the public also want to maybe intervene, or I don't know, or I don't know whether perhaps people have really been so informed that they maybe should stay away. Just let me just get from you, what is the correct procedure? What should be done? Can I, as a public person, just come and try and assist, or what exactly should be done? First thing first, before emergency.
Here's my advice to the nation. Always make sure you know the emergency numbers that might need to be called in the case of any emergency. Make sure you know them off by heart, because you don't want to look through a phone when you can't look through a phone, or the battery's died, or something like that, and you suddenly need to remember a number. Learn numbers like the MVA funds, 9682, 9682.
Yeah.
Get it in your head that when an accident happens, the first thing you do is phone MVA funds, 9682. You call them. You tell them where you are. What's the situation? Then you go and assess the situation safely. Once you've seen that it's a safe situation to approach, then you approach it. Once you know what is going on there, preferably stay on the line with MVA Fund. They can guide you. If they've got medical crews that can guide you how to stop a bleeding, how to not extract somebody from the vehicle that is not in a life-threatening situation, like a car burning or that. Learn what needs to be done, and then the most important thing, and I've been trying to get this parted in the Namibian driver's license requirements, is that every driver, I believe, should have first aid certificate. It's a 3-day course Okay, it's a 3-day course,
yeah.
And you learn the basics, how to treat a wound, what to do when you arrive on a scene, how to handle a situation, and CPR, which can save somebody's lives, or how to stop a profusely bleeding wound.
Mm.
That can save lives, because to get an ambulance, we have roads that the distance between towns is very vast and far. So to dispatch an ambulance takes about 15 minutes. Then it takes an hour or 45 minutes to get to the scene because of the long distance. In that time, somebody's already bled out. But if you had just taken a cloth and you had compressed the wound, you would have saved that person's life.
Mm-hmm.
So first aid, basic first aid. And if you can't do the course, go and at least watch videos on first aid so that you have the knowledge, that you have the visual what to do. I'm not saying that you must now run around and pretend to be a medic, but if you see somebody cutting themselves and bleeding profusely and you know what to do,
yeah,
that will make the difference between life and death. When somebody goes into the ocean and nearly drowns and you got them out of the water, CPR needs to be administered immediately. We cannot wait for ambulances.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the ambulance gets there, they declare the person dead.
Yes.
So you learn something very basic, very simple, and that is how to do a CPR procedure. And it's really not hard if you know exactly what to do. And it takes a little bit of effort to find out, what do I do if somebody's bleeding?
Mm-hmm.
There's out at the palm of your hand is all these access today. You can have it. We didn't have cell phones in our days, okay? But you can literally say, I'm at a scene, I've got this situation. But that's why I said call centers,
yes,
like 9682.
Yeah.
I'm standing here, the guy's bleeding out of his left arm, but it's spraying out. What do I do? Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And then the medic that's on the other side by the call center can say to you, take a cloth, make a tourniquet, do this kind of thing, and that can make the difference, so you can become their hands on scene. But never put your own life in danger. If you come into a scene and there's a car that's burning,
yeah,
and you cannot extract those people swiftly and fast out of that scene, get away. We cannot save everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take unnecessary. I know I do ridiculous things myself because I've got this in me. I run into burning buildings. I don't run out of them, you know?
Yeah.
I run into a serious situation. But that takes a type of knowledge. It takes a type of experience. And it takes a kind of mindset, you know?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, if you should come across an accident, the first thing you do is call the MVA fund. They have a toll-free number, 9682. You call them. We have a 24-hour call center, which I've been monitoring for the last 10, 11, 12, maybe, I don't know how many years, on an easy, basic 919 toll-free number. Call us. We will guide you. You need help. You've got a flat tire somewhere. We'll find you help. This is why we created the NAM Strong platforms, because united we become a strong nation, and it's the biggest information alert and assist platform in this country, and we work together hand in hand with media holdings to keep the nation updated. What's happening on the roads? Is there an accident? Is there an obstruction? What's happening? And this way we're helping each other to make our country better and safer for everybody.
Mm-hmm. You're so right. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms, of course, of you spoke about preparation, and I really appreciate that. But then, you know, there's still the statistics of the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund actually say that human behavior, 72% of accidents are a result of human behavior. Speak to us about those aspects, especially drunken driving, speeding, those ones that I think people ignore, that of course we shouldn't ignore this festive season and any other season, actually, and any other time we're driving on the road.
One of the biggest problems we're going to face over the festive season is people under the influence. And that is a very sad thing, that you as a human being can go and get intoxicated and then think that you can climb onto the road and be competent and put everybody else's lives in danger when an Uber or a taxi would have cost you $50 or $100 or $200. What is a life worth today? Do you know how many people are sitting in prison because they killed somebody in an accident and promise you they're good people, they just did stupid things? You know, they one day go to a party, they have too much wine to drink, they get in the car, think that they can, and the next thing they cause an accident, somebody dies in the accident, and they spend the rest of their lives in prison for killing somebody innocently. It was innocent because that person would have never done it. It was not intent. But the fact that they took a drink and got under the influence, they knew they were doing something wrong, and therefore I told you we need to teach our children accountability. Mm-hmm. We have people sitting in prison today who had jobs, they had wives, they had families, they were good citizens, but they stupidly made mistakes like drinking and driving after a party, mm-hmm. caused an accident, and lives were lost. And you can say sorry until you're blue in the face, you're stuck in that jail, and people are dead or paralyzed or injured due to your reckless endangerment and your actions. And this is the same with speeding. It's the same with overtaking on double lines. Those lines weren't just painted there for the fun of it. They were painted by strategic people who calculated what needs to be done here for the safety of the road users. Mm. If a sign tells you drive 60, it's because it's been precisely calculated that this is the safest speed in this zone. We go, well, I've got a car that does 240, so let me take it to the pedal. Yeah. And if you hit something at 240, you have nothing left. And you claimed we had a very sad accident last year there by the Wilhelmstal, where it was a collision, the car caught fire, all lives lost in the vehicle. Yeah. So unnecessary.
How many
lives? All at the hands of reckless people.
Mm.
Don't take chances. You're not alone. Stop being selfish. Just consider other people. Get on the road and say, you know, look at other people, wave at them. Be conscious of the fact that you're not on the road alone.
That's true.
If you stop at a service station, look at every single person there and know that they want to get to their destination. They also want to see their families. They want to spend time with their grandchildren. You climbing in your fancy car, driving at a high speed or under the influence can ruin a family's life. You can do ruin, and this is where it comes on. We need to. Same with littering. Mm-hmm. You think throwing your piece of paper on the ground doesn't make a difference? Let me show you what we pull out of the ocean. Let me show you what gets loaded on the dump heaps on a daily basis from human waste.
Yeah.
And then you just, so at the end of the day, it comes down to being a considerate human being. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not alone. We have to think about the next person. The next person who's on the road, they just want to get to their destination. They want to go say hi to their loved one. And now you are taking chances, being reckless. And at the end of the day, you're putting every single person, including yourself, and I'm saying this very loudly to passenger carrier vehicles like taxis and shuttles and stuff that will be traveling during the festive season. Load your vehicles properly. Make sure your vehicles are safe for passengers.
Yeah.
Make sure your trailers are packed properly. Don't take unnecessary chances because we've lost way too many lives on our roads due to negligence and inconsideration.
Mm-hmm. And what about overtaking at blind spots and you know, driving and speeding? I know I'm not sure if we really exhausted that in speeding, but in also overtaking at blind spots. I think where exactly do you think we need to play our part in trying to combat accidents? I know that the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund, the Roads Fund Administration, the Roads Authority, I do want to believe that they really do play their part in trying to make the people aware, in raising awareness, especially towards the festive season, Sean. But then again, I don't know. Is there something perhaps that we are lacking to do that we need to do more? Or is it that maybe the people themselves are just not adhering? Or maybe do we need to bring up stricter measures, stricter punishments? What do you say?
You can do all those things. If the person's mindset is not right, they're not going to adhere. And this this is where law enforcement, I take off my hat, they do their jobs, they do the campaigns, they invest millions of dollars. But you can put up a stop sign. I have here in front of me a sign that says no swimming and no fishing.
Yeah.
To my left, there's a fisherman, and to my right, there's somebody swimming. The board is there. The board is there. It's telling you, please do not do this. Yeah? But no, we are taking chances with other people's lives. We are risking other people's lives. And as I said, those stripes were painted there for a reason. And laws have been set for a reason. And we all want to be wild and rebellious. But at the end of the day, you know, we need to adhere. We need to be considerate. Now you're taking chances and you're going around bends and you're putting the risk of having an accident so much more. And the lawgivers have done their job. The traffics are standing there. They can only do so much. You can't have, like, every corner a traffic officer. Look what's happened with speed bumps. We are plagued in our country with speed bumps. It is the worst thing that I could ever imagine, that we need to, for the few lawless people, we need to cause everybody else inconvenience, including emergency services,
yeah,
who have to rush to a house but have to go through 10 speed bumps just,
yeah,
to get to the house,
yeah,
because of people who are lawless and race up and down in front of houses.
Yeah.
So now we're popping up speed bumps all over the place, okay,
mm-hmm,
which are not necessary if everybody kept to the law.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, when there's a patient in the ambulance who's, imagine going through, let's say, for instance, they just had a
cardiac arrest.
Yeah. Oh.
And they need to get to the hospital in 5 minutes, otherwise we lose them, but I have to go through 10 speed bumps because we have to control lawless people.
Yeah.
You see? This is the problem. It's about cooperation. It's about everybody doing their part, being a good moral citizen.
Mm-hmm. So for the passengers, especially passengers, you know, do they also have a part to play in terms of a driver that is driving recklessly, not adhering to the rules on the road? What is their part to play?
This is a very good question. That's why we have Namstrong platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Namstrong is a WhatsApp platform and a social media platform where people can report. We've had people say, listen, I'm in a taxi, I'm on my way to Katima, we're in a shuttle, and this driver is falling asleep behind the wheel. Then we notify the traffic officials and they come out and they stop the vehicle. We've managed to save many lives and we've managed to help many people. So I encourage you as a passenger, if you climb into a vehicle and your driver is acting reckless or wrong or under the influence, get out the taxi. Get out the vehicle. Tell them, hey, you're driving like an idiot. Stop it. You're taking unnecessary chances. It's your life in their hands.
You're right.
They need to know that. You need to say to them, hey, you can drive like this when you're alone. If that's how the way you want to drive, but don't drive with me like that in this car. You see? Play your part. Reprimand them. Tell them, sir, please put your safety belt on. You know?
Yeah.
You do your part. If you phone the MVA fund, say to them, people, I'm busy traveling to Ondangwa, and this shuttle driver is drinking a beer. You know what I mean? Report them.
Yes. And I think people don't know that they can actually do that, hey? Or what's really the issue?
The MVA fund, they'll get it to the right people or to our call center. The police also have call center numbers. Very easy numbers. Learn the numbers. Call them and say, listen, if you can, make videos, evidence. That's why we're encouraging dash cams. I'm fully behind the idea that every vehicle should have a dash cam so that when something happens, it's there. It's evidence. It's proof. It will save people's cases. It will save their lives, and it will make our roads much safer. I'm fully behind this.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we should have fire extinguishers in every vehicle, and the fact that every driver should compulsory have a first aid certificate,
mm-hmm,
renewed,
mm-hmm,
every 3 years or 2 years,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important because we need to learn to work together. We're not alone. And having things like this is going to make the difference. Report them. Report them. We encourage people. We tell them if you see reckless drivers or people drunken, we've had people pulled over by the traffic officers and they've been removed from the road and they were highly, highly intoxicated. They could have taken your loved one's lives had you not acted. Mm-hmm. I encourage it 100%.
Yeah.
Call me at 2 o'clock in the morning and tell me.
So, you've got everything sorted for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. Meat spice, boik is ready. Even got some playlists lined up, bro.
And the crew? They're all coming, right?
Howie, everyone's in. It's gonna be lekker.
Wait. What about the tassies?
Bruh, you can't get here without tassim, bruh. It's like cabana without salsa, dog.
Tassimbert. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Yeah. Call me at 2 o'clock in the morning and tell me this driver is drunk. I will make sure that the traffic officers deal with him.
Mm-hmm.
I have spent the last 16 years monitoring over 72 platforms and the control center by myself. Okay, 24 hours a day to make sure from a domestic violence to a snake in your yard to a fire in Ondangwa to a drowning, it all gets attention immediately. I have made this my personal mission for the last 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what a proper sleep is. I don't know what it is to have a social life other than social media.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I have committed to make sure you call our control center at 919. I'm behind that phone and I will make sure you get help.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you phone us or the MVA fund and say, this is the thing, or the police or whatever, and say, this is the situation. I'm in a vehicle. This guy's under the influence or he's driving dangerously and he's putting all our lives at risk. I'm in a blue car. And always, if you climb in a public transport, anything, taxi, anything, take the registration number down and take the big number if they've got one.
Mm-hmm.
Or take a photo of it on your phone.
Mm. Yeah, ne? Actually, for evidence purposes.
Not just that. If something happens to you, it's on your phone.
Oh, yes.
If something, we do have kidnappings, we do have robberies, we do have things like this. So you, before you climb into a taxi, just walk past the back, take a photo of the back, take a photo of the number plate, and you climb in the car. If you're in trouble, send it to a family member or friend, just so that they have it. Should anything happen to you, they know which vehicle you were in last.
Yeah.
That's going to help solve the case very fast.
That's true. You spoke about snakes, and I only remembered now that you also...
Yeah, it's summertime, eh?
Exactly at what point did you decide that, did you need to take a course to be able to handle snakes? And
I did everything I did before knowing how to do it. I'm a self-taught musician too and guitarist too. So I just took action. Somebody said there's a snake in my yard. I myself grilled for snakes. I had been indoctrinated like everybody else about the fear of snakes.
Yeah.
And one day somebody phoned me and I have no fear of nothing. And I just grabbed the snake and I said, this is not that bad. Mm-hmm. And then I learned and I studied them. And eventually I became the first man on earth to live for 3 years with a black mamba and a boomstang free roaming in my bedroom. And I became the first man on earth to kiss a black mamba.
Oh my word.
Because I took the time and effort to study them, to learn their ways, to learn that they are defensive creatures, that things told about them are lies. They're there to help us control the ecosystem, to control pests, like that.
We appreciate that, but...
and they're defensive creatures. But we have this mentality because we've been indoctrinated and the religious aspect of it that we hate them before we even met them. Like me, a lot of people hate me, but they've never met me.
Yeah.
A lot of people have a lot to say about me and spread rumors and gossip and myths, yet they've never met me. Same thing with snakes. I spent time with them and I learned they're the most docile, shy creatures and they are defensive, each with its own defensive mechanism. You leave them alone, I promise you they'll leave you alone.
Are you sure?
Oh, yes. I've broken so many myths, it's unbelievable. I will rewrite a thesis on snakes, and people will realize that the only snakes are the two-legged snake that looks at your face and tells you that they love you and they don't.
Mm.
People who will smile to your face with a double forked tongue and then speak bad behind your back.
Yeah, that's
those are the real snakes you got to worry about.
Mm. But when I do see, I don't even want to say that. When I do see a snake somewhere, I don't want to say
you just
house,
call my call center. Yes, you just call my call center. No, I've got marshal rangers all over the country, professional snake handlers, that I can get you help anywhere in this country. You name it, I can help you. I've built the last 28 years of serving this country. I've built up a good relationship with contacts, people, who does what. I'm telling you, you get a flat tire in this country, I'll take care of you.
Mm.
You got an issue at your house, I come and get somebody to remove a gecko for you.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
And that I've dedicated my life as a patriot of my country to do. And this is why I'm glad. As I said, my upbringing and my foundation was a little bit shaky.
Mm-hmm.
But who I've become and who I've grown into, I'm a dedicated, humbled servant of my nation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I will invest as much as I can through all my businesses, through my tour companies, through everything that I do into making sure that this country is safe and secure.
I hear you. Sean, let's talk about our emergency services. I know you have a vast experience in this regard, and having been on the road for I don't know how many years, but for a very long time, what improvements do you think that we need to focus on to ensure that our emergency aspect delivers and on time and delivers quality services to the people? What is it that you think that you're calling on, especially with your experience and seeing where what legs way?
I would advise the private sector to support the private sector ambulance and emergency services by investing in them. They do a lot of community services for free.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of things which cost them. They would do a lot more, but they always have to carry the costs themselves, and this is what killed my business too.
Mm.
I would advise the people to support and encourage the state, the government. Mm-hmm. And thanks to the private sector that has been donating ambulances and stuff like that. But equipment is expensive.
Yeah.
And this is why we started the CPR Foundation, the Community Patient and Rescue Foundation. It's a legally registered trust fund. You can go and find out about us. We are raising funds so that we can make sure that all who do emergency services get compensated for their services, whether it's for animals, whether it's for humans, anybody who does rescues and emergency services, we want to take care of them. When we don't want them not to be able to save a life because they don't have an oxygen bottle or they don't have a syringe or they don't have, so the private sector is dependent on their own income, but they do a lot for the communities and for the people. And we need to contribute towards this and support them. Support your local emergency services. Don't make donations towards them. Stand by them. Help them with donations of equipment. May help them with gear. Help them with tires for their cars.
Yeah.
Help them. Help them. Help them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And unless we help each other, we're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
And this way we build up. We want to, with the CPR Foundation, build the biggest emergency rescue service in this country, working together with state and private service providers, working united as a common ground and a common purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Just stand by us and we stand by you. I promise you, you do not want to spend the day in the life of an emergency worker. It's one of the most stressful things, and it's nice to be given a cup of coffee at a tea.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Or when you come into the shop and you know this guy's an emergency worker, give him a cool drink.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Because then he feels value in what he's doing for the people, because a lot of the private ambulance services do free calls for the communities.
Yeah. Sean, talk to us about the National Emergency Reaction Unit.
Yes. This is something that we started when we realized there's a lot of emergencies in this country and nobody is standing together. So what we did is we started the National Emergency Rescue Unit. It's called NERU, okay? And this is so that we, as all emergency practitioners and services, we stand together. Even you as a Namibian citizen, if you want to, and there's a situation like fires, South fires, and you want to volunteer, you become a part of NERO, and NERO will make sure that when there is a fire, we go and say, guys, there's a fire in this place, who's joining? And that way we work together as a nation, and that way we support each other. So you still have your private ambulance service, you still have your private thing, you still do your thing. But when crisis or an emergency happens in our country, flooding, fires, accidents, whatever, we stand together as a unit. So NERO belongs to every national citizen who wants to be part of helping the other. And therefore we encourage people to join, companies to join, stand together. And this is why we started NERO. As the head of NERO, I saw the need for a national emergency response unit mm-hmm. that will take action mm-hmm. when something happens.
Mm-hmm. Something happened, like for instance, the main purpose is to come together for disaster management. Like for instance,
yes, mm-hmm. yes. Any disaster, we are coordinators. We put all these people together that provide their own individual services, and we coordinate through one central thing, and therefore you have unity and you work as a team to resolve that national crisis, whether it's flooding, whether it's fires, whether it's an accident, whether it's a plague, whether anything. We then coordinate the whole thing so that everybody falls under one umbrella. Instead of everybody running around like mad chickens, not knowing what to do and panic.
Yeah. Why is it so important then, when it comes to disaster risk management? I mean, Sean, currently, you know, the fire broke out in Etosha the other time. And since then, we're hearing fire breaks out in Rundu, fire breaks out here, fire breaks out there. Is it, perhaps, once again.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
Once again, preparation is key. Investing in the right equipment, training and tools. That fire could have been stopped within the first 2 days maximum.
Yeah.
But because there weren't strategic plans put in place, fire lines, fire breaks, and preparation was not made, it spread. Wind cam, and it just carried it because there wasn't equipment available, there wasn't proper facilities available, the public was first kept apart, then the public was allowed. We need to learn to work together, public and state. We need to work officials and public together. Unity, as I said, is strength, and we need to better equip our service providers. It doesn't help we've got two firefighters for a big fire. We need to have many. We need to have things like Bambi buckets for when the Namibian Defense Force does want to jump in and help us. We can scoop water from the nearest waterhole or create reservoirs, and that way we can put out fires like this. So it's very important. Like before December, we do training and we brief all our lifeguards on what to do, how to do, when to do. And this is very, 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 very important for the government to do such things, to invest in proper equipment and to invest in training and preparation so that when a disaster hits, people don't panic, they know what to do. Because you can only, we say this in martial arts, you can only fall back as far as your knowledge. So if you train, this is why people train in martial arts, so that we have an instinctive thing in our minds mm-hmm. that the minute a defensive situation or an offensive situation happens, we automatically go into that mode and we know what to do because we've been trained and skilled and we're equipped in it.
Mm. You know, I've heard about the accident that happened in the Chuarongo and claimed three lives. It's almost like, every week or almost every now and then, now during festive season, we are bound to lose lives due to accidents and whatnot. I don't know. Sean, what exactly must we do? I know, I've asked this question already in terms of talking about public awareness, but then our roads seem to be okay, or is there more?
There's more we can do.
Okay.
there is more we can do.
Mm-hmm.
We can start by doing our part as individuals.
Yeah.
Like making sure our vehicles are road safety. Like making sure you have the right tires on your vehicles. At making sure that everything is secure when you are loading. That is the part we have to play as individuals. By individually doing your part, you are cooperating in the bigger perspective.
Yeah.
We are losing lives every year, and some of them are due to a tire that burst because the guy's riding on bald tires with passengers in his vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So it is on every single... This is where it sounds contradictory, but it's not. We are individuals, and we are accountable for our individual actions. But we are responsible, and we need to be considerate and realize that we're not alone on the roads. And therefore, our actions will determine the outcome of should a tire burst, should this happen. And therefore, it boils down to you do your part, and you consider others, and our roads will become so much safer and our statistics will drop. Unfortunately, for life, we are guaranteed one thing, we all die. That is the one thing we are all guaranteed, is that we all die.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to die because of somebody's negligence or recklessness or driving under the influence. We'd like to get to our old age and live our lives out and pass peacefully.
Mm-hmm. Are we resting enough? Perhaps are the drivers resting enough, especially truck drivers? Let's talk about truck drivers who drive long distances. And I'm hearing that it's only most times just one driver. And why are companies actually allowed to get away with this? Why would you allow somebody to drive such long distances from country to country, yet doesn't have an assistant driver?
Fatigue is one of the biggest causes of accidents on the road. Also, people falling asleep behind the wheel. Drivers have been driving for hours from Johannesburg to Namibia. They get stuck at the border with paperwork for 5 hours. They're driving, and then they don't take enough rest. They don't stop because their bosses are pushing them to get the load there. There's no consideration. There's a budget issue, and there isn't laws that say there have to be two drivers, which I believe there should be. You know what I mean? This is about cutting costs, you know? So they don't employ two drivers, so they only have one driver on. A company like Intercape has to have two drivers on board, you know, because they take over in shifts. But because it's costly for companies, they cut it because there's no law that imposes or makes it that it's compulsory. But I would advise that there always be, especially long-distance cross-border, that there's two drivers on board, one rests, one drives.
Yeah. Now, Sean, as we near our conclusion of our discussion, I want to tap from you, apart from the questions that I'm asking, I'm sure there's some stuff that you would want to address for our own safety net. What are those things that you would want to address, Sean?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I want everybody to have a good time. I want everybody to have fun. I want them to fulfill their dreams and do what they have to do towards contributing towards a better and safer country. But I'd like to say, at the end of the day, you need to look at yourself as an individual and look at this country and go, I love this country. I'm going to do my part. And I think the theme for this year for me is going to be, I will do my part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just do your part.
Yeah, just do your part. And you're a good, I appreciate
a representative
how
for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just do your part.
Uh-huh. No, I want to talk about the fact that you say division is the tool used to destroy humanity.
Yes, indeed. That is it. That is what's causing governments and countries and nations to crumble. Even if you can cause division, you can cause a weakness. Mm-hmm. And division is the one tool used to pull us apart and to destroy us as a species.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it that way. We're all humans, regardless of your skin pigmentation. We are all humans. We all bleed. We all breathe. We all whatever. So at the end of the day, we are all individuals, and we need to know that we're part of something bigger. And if we just do our part, okay, as individuals, we make a difference.
Yeah. I don't want to have to let you go without giving you an opportunity to speak about domestic abuse and domestic violence. What's your message to the people in that regard?
I get a lot of phone calls at our call center through the night, early hours of the morning on domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
All right, please report it. If you're being abused, if you're in an abusive situation, even some people feel trapped and they can't get out, reach out to somebody. Speak to somebody. And if you feel that your life is in jeopardy or you're going to be in a situation, report it. Report it to the police. Let people know you're in an abusive relationship. And if anything happens or you suddenly go silent for 2-3 days, check up on people. Check up on people. Make sure they are fine. And alcohol, I'm sorry, and drugs and stuff like that is a big playing factor. A lot of people change their characters when they're under the influence of alcohol. Be careful of this. If you feel you're in an abusive situation, get out. Your life is worth more. We've had too many people in passion killings and killings where people come home and they drunk and they fight with their spouses and stuff. If your neighbors are fighting, don't keep quiet. Don't ignore it. Report it. Report there's noise that you feel like the man's beating up his wife,
yes,
or the wife's beating up the man.
Yes.
Men, come forward.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be proud. Don't be nothing. Go forward. We've got women out there that are very abusive. They beat their men. They report it.
Yeah.
You're not lesser of a man.
That's true. But
people, men are too scared to go and report because they fear the police or whatever will laugh at them or their friends. The statistics of men's suicide is the highest in the world.
Mm-hmm.
More men kill because they don't have anybody to talk to.
Yes.
They don't have anybody to deal with. And if there's domestic violence in your residential area, report it to social workers, especially if there's children involved. No need for children to grow up in that environment.
Exactly. But I think
you're doing them a favor.
Thank you. I appreciate that point that you're speaking right there. You know, we speak about, unfortunately, so got killed by their partner. But these people have neighbors, and I think we're not there.
And they hear them fighting every day.
Yes, I'm one person who I wouldn't let that slide. If I hear something like that, I make sure.
I walk into the neighbor's yard and I say, listen, if you don't now stop your nonsense, and I don't care whether it's the man or the woman.
Yeah.
I'll confront the woman too and say, listen, what you're doing is wrong and it's affecting everybody's life, and we need to be neighbors. Neighbors, love thy neighbor. That is what it was written.
Mm-hmm.
Love your neighbor.
Mm-hmm. At least even if they're not bold enough or perhaps want to be very cautious to not enter in such a confrontational situation.
Somebody.
Exactly. Call somebody.
Report it.
Why are people being so negligent?
Because everybody's self-centered and they're living in their own little bubbles and they're too scared.
Yeah.
You can phone anonymously anytime and nobody's going to hold you accountable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's daylight and it's festive season, truly, and you will hear people fighting at the neighbor's house. We're having a party. All of a sudden, a fight breaks out and you are just, sometimes they come and stay and look at what's happening and say nothing.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't be that person that doesn't make a difference. If you see even suspicious movements, people doing things that you know are wrong, report it. Report it.
Yeah, that's so true.
Good.
Sean, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the radar, the news analysis, but on Life Lessons. It's a pleasure to really have you and talk to you about your passion, hey?
I love it. I love it. And I love my country. I love my people. Yes, I'm not perfect. Yes, I'm a bit controversial. But you know what?
Yeah.
Everything I do is for my people and for my country, because Namibia, when we stand together, we are NAM strong. So let's all work together. Let's be wise. And let's save lives.
Mm-hmm. And there you had it from Sean Naude.
And now let's take a listen to former law enforcement officer Pinias Tangeni to also educate us on road safety tips during this festive season.
Now, Mr. Tangeni, we are, of course, now entered into December, and which is also known as the festive season. But we know that it's around about this time that our roads are filled with so many accidents. What do you think is the contributing factor that we are experiencing so many accidents on our roads, especially this time of the festive season?
Thank you very much. Well, road accidents is a very serious burning issue in our country. Despite a country of a very small population and the number of vehicles on the road are of no exception. They are also small in number in comparing to other African countries and countries of the world as a whole. The contributing factors are obviously, are self-explanatory. They are obvious. Number one is alcohol consumption or consuming alcohol before
embarking on a journey.
Embarking on your journey. Thank you. Of course, our law is very lenient on that.
Why do you say that?
Because we are allowed to drink up to a certain level in Namibia. Alcohol or drinking or consumption of alcohol should not be allowed at all. Even drivers would drive public
transport.
Like they consume alcohol before they embark on their journeys. You find, for example, at Okatana service in Oshakati, you find the driver is drinking while other people are assisting him loading the bus. It's all over.
Yeah, it's true.
I think our law enforcement officers should make sure that all the drivers are tested at all traffic checkpoints.
In other words, we should do away with the alcohol limit of, I'm not sure whether it's 0.50,
0.05. I'm not sure of the limit as well, but it should be zero tolerance.
Okay.
Number one, overspeeding. Drivers are overspeeding, and even if they are caught, they are not. They are given lenient punishment. I think we should resort to stuff like spot fine, spot fine and revocation of driver's license.
More harsher, sort of harsher punishment to make them actually not to
suspend the license. Maybe first offender license should be suspended.
Yeah.
If you happen to be caught for the second time, a revocation of license. The license should be revoked completely. And undercover officers should be assigned to a person whose license is suspended, so that just to make sure that he is not going to drive without a driver's license.
Yeah.
But I think that will help
maybe
reduce the fatalities on our national roads.
Tata Tangeni, why do you think we should make more tighter measures? Or perhaps are we, or maybe let me put my question to say, do you think we are a bit lenient when it comes to really dealing with road accidents and obviously us human factors and trying to combat it, are we quite lenient? Perhaps are we not taking harsh measures that should be taken?
Doesn't Ms. Happy, human's actions can only be controlled by imposing harsh punishments.
Yeah.
And not necessarily payments, because we have people with money and they don't respect the law, because their money will come to their rescue eventually.
Mm-hmm.
What should be done is somebody who commits serious traffic offenses should be locked up immediately, provided that there is substantial evidence to support the officer's action, and avoid the possible legal implications, I mean civil cases.
Yeah.
But that, if even if you have your money and you get arrested 6 months behind bars, next you will only punish 1 to 3 people and the whole nation will be on track.
I hear you. As a former law enforcement officer, do you think law enforcement officers themselves are guilty of assisting or condoning, driving and speeding? Because obviously some drivers come and bribe them and they take that bribe. Are we perhaps, as law enforcement officers, are they perhaps assisting in actually spreading this sort of, to say, disease of speeding and at the end of the day causing road fatalities on the road?
If I understand your question well, yes, I would say yes. The officers, there are always allegations of traffic officers taking bribes.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, they make it a money-making scheme. They knocking off with 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 a day. And they are not doing what is expected of them anymore. They go and work for their pockets. And despite the fact that they, at the end of the month, they expect salaries into their respective accounts. It's a very common thing on our highway, or highway patrol officers.
Yeah.
They are taking bribes, and I'm saying it's an allegation because I have never paid one.
Okay.
And I will never pay one.
Mm-hmm.
But wherever we go, fellow citizens are talking on how they bribed the traffic officers and how much they gave them.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day I was traveling from the north in a bus, a Iveco bus, which was over speeding.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were stopped by the traffic officer.
Yeah.
The driver went, they went to stop a bit a distance from where the traffic officers were standing. And then he came running. He went, he spoke to the traffic officers, came running to the bus and asking, who has changed for 200? And then he went back. The bus was full to the capacity, and the driver had the audacity to come and look for the change to bribe a traffic officer in...
Full view.
In the full view of bus occupants, meaning it's like it's a public thing. It's an obvious thing. They are being bribed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should start, or the police as an organization should start with them.
Mm.
I remember there are senior police officers who defend when you say traffic officers are bribed. We say we should come with the, those are just allegations, false accusations.
Yeah.
We should come up with
evidence.
Names of specific officers, if we are telling the truth. But I'm sure every citizen who make use of our roads knows that our traffic officers take bribes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we should get a strategy as a country to get rid of that first.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the law is no more enforced fully.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have what we call a traffic tape,
mm-hmm.
then you are safe. Then you continue endangering lives of other road users.
Absolutely. Who are probably even adhering to the road signs and road safetiness.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have the motor vehicle accident of Namibia, which I would say really goes out and with educational campaigns, and especially during the festive season, they're mostly also always on our roads, educating the people, and also just asking them to adhere to the road safety rules, check your tires and all that kind of stuff. And also statistics from the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund account say that 72% of the road accidents are accounted for because of human behavior. And you spoke earlier, of course, about speeding, you spoke about alcohol and that kind of stuff. What other behavior would you pinpoint for yourself and say, perhaps as a frequent driver on our Namibian roads, that you observe other drivers doing? What other behavior would you say is also a contributing factor to road fatalities on our Namibian roads?
I don't care attitudes. There are drivers who have I don't care attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
You are speeding, you are on a road going straight, and another driver is joining the road from the side, but they do not join the road when it's safe to do so.
Mm-hmm.
They join the road that let him bump me. So he expects you, who is already going straight, to stop or reduce so that he can join the road safely. And sometimes you are overspeeding, and once that the driver who joined the road access the road fully, then he reduces. It's also a very dangerous attitude.
Yes.
And another contributing factor is when driving in the night, our road is too dark.
Mm.
Very, very dark. So I can tell you the roads which were constructed recently, in the northern Namibia, I'm saying in the northern part of the country because I'm from there.
Mm-hmm.
They have reflectors all over. When you are about a kilometer away, you can already see a gentle cave or a sharp cave from a very distance. And as a driver, you will be prepared. You are approaching the cave prepared.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the roads which were constructed during the colonial apartheid, they do not have such reflectors. They are very important. I think it's not an expensive exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So the government should consider to cover the whole Namibian road network with reflectors.
Mm-hmm.
They will also help reduce the accidents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, not so long ago, the Minister of Transport, Veiko Nekundi, spoke about animals being put reflectors on them so that they can, this can also help in combating road accidents, especially in respect to animals. But what's your take on that?
It's a very brilliant idea, His Honorable Veiko Nekundi is one of the brilliant and hardworking ministers.
Mm-hmm.
Most of his, I believe they gave him a right ministry.
Mm.
He's doing a great job. It's a very brilliant idea because more especially in the rural areas,
mm-hmm.
accidents or road fatalities are occurring as a result of animals.
Yeah.
The moment you see them, you only see them when you are approaching, and of course, and obviously you cannot break suddenly,
mm-hmm.
and they are killing or they are causing serious fatalities.
Yeah.
If every animal happened to be fitted with reflectors,
mm-hmm.
obviously no accident will happen as a result of animals being on the road,
mm-hmm.
because one can see them or would see them from a very long distance.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Shikolo, what part do we as passengers have to play in road safetiness and arriving to our destinations safely, especially when you're traveling perhaps in a bus, which is going to be very common now towards early middle of December as people are traveling to their hometowns to visit their family members. And of course, sometimes you can see that the driver is exhibiting some very uncalled for behavior. What part then we as passengers do we have to play in that aspect?
As a passenger, you should keep in mind that your life is involved too.
Yeah.
If a driver is misbehaving or doing things which are unlawful, for example, overspeeding, drinking while driving, it's your responsibility to call him to order.
Mm.
And if he does not want to comply during the festive season, law enforcement officers are deployed all over throughout the country.
Yeah.
Report to the law enforcement officers immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So that the driver can be dealt with accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely hear you. Other than that, we also have, of course, pedestrian crossing issues as well, whereby I think for some pedestrians, they'll be crossing the road and they'll cross at places that they shouldn't, and just also, what do the pedestrians themselves have their, which part do they also have to play in terms of them being safe this festive season?
In that regard, what is needed is just public education.
Mm.
Otherwise, the individuals cannot be fined or given fines,
mm-hmm.
but the most effective action is public education.
True.
And that public education should involve media houses, law enforcement agencies,
mm-hmm.
and public at large.
Mm-hmm.
It's a responsibility of each and everyone.
Yeah.
At home, educating kids and fellow adults.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chikolo, your last message to us as we are talking about road safetiness, especially during this festive season.
My last message is just to tell fellow Namibians, a life is something precious.
Mm-hmm.
And once you make a mistake with it, it's gone for good. Let us take care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Let us be responsible. Let us educate our kids to be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Once a life is gone, it's gone forever.
That's true.
And let us do away with over consumption of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
That's alcohol is one of the biggest enemy. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Mr. Chikolo.
And we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of Life Lessons. Make sure that you do stay tuned for other engagements right here on Eagle FM and tune in for more insightful conversation and discussions right here on your number one talk radio station. Now, from me, Nafaya Pejujo, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful Saturday evening. I'll see you again next time, same time, same place, right here on Eagle FM.